Okay, we're talking to Hal Smith, one of the original Wacky Top 40 DJs back in the late 50s. Is that correct, Hal?
Yes, I joined Wacky Radio in October of 1959.
Were they already operating as a Top 40
already
radio station?
Already operating as WAKY and Top 40, owned by Gordon McClendon, yes.
So how long had they been on the air as Wacky when you joined them?
They had been on about 6 or 7 months. They were still putting the crew together there, and I think I replaced the guy by the name of Phil Page.
Where were you before you came to Wacky?
I was at WKDA in Nashville.
Oh, that's a pretty good radio station, a nice city.
Yeah, we were 250-watt, but we're still number one in the market.
Now, how long had you been in radio before you came to Wacky?
Been in radio about 4 years.
Okay, now was getting the job at Wacky a pretty big deal?
Yeah, I was at WKDA doing morning drive and afternoon drive, and Gordon McClendon and Don Keyes, his national PD, had a change of plane in Nashville and heard me and called me up, and next thing I knew, I was at WAKY.
Now, of course, when we talk about Gordon McClendon these days, people that have been around radio for a long time know what a big deal it was to work for Gordon McClendon and his impact on the world of Top 40 radio. But in 1959, did that carry any weight with you?
Yes, I had told my wife about just a few weeks before I got the call from Don Keyes that I'd almost be willing to work for Gordon McClendon for nothing. And you know, a couple of weeks later, I get the call. I didn't mention him in the conversation I had, but it was a privilege to work for him. And
why was that?
He was so innovative, so creative. He was pretty aggressive with the promotions. We had a big battle between the radio station and the Louisville Courier Journal. They had printed something unfavorable about WAKY, and Gordon sent a series of, quote, editorials up for us to run. And one of them ended with, if the Courier Journal would stick to reporting the news instead of attacking people, maybe it would be used for something besides covers for birdcage bottoms. So he was pretty aggressive.
Now, when you came to Wacky in 1959, was anybody else doing Top 40 radio in Louisville?
Yes, WKLO was doing Top 40. They were a big competitor. It was almost no contest. At one time, shortly after Wacky became Wacky, we had an average rating of about a 47, I think.
Wow.
Yeah. Jack Sanders, who did Afternoon Drive, had a 60 share.
Now, he was the program director, too, wasn't he?
He was. When I first went there, Jim Lightfoot, or used the name Jim Light, was the program director and morning man. Jim went, I believe, at that time, he went to KFWB in Los Angeles and soon became the GM and died. And I don't know, he was in his late 30s when he died. And Jack Sanders became program director. And then Jim Brand was hired as PD. And Jim left, and I became PD.
Now, how long were you at Wacky?
I left in August of 62, so I was there almost 3 years.
Now, what was it like to work on the radio in the late 50s, early 60s?
It was incredible, especially in Louisville, because if you're on the radio, especially at WAKY, it was something akin to being a celebrity. At that time, Philip Morris Company would have a free concert at Freedom Hall during Derby Week, and they would get these acts to come in and hire a DJ from each station to MC, and each DJ would introduce a different act. When you were introduced and walked down on stage to that roar of the crowd, it got the adrenaline pumping.
Now, when you were at Wacky, I guess that was before they invented cart machines, so you had to play everything pretty much off reel-to-reels and turntables?
We had everything on acetate, on disc. We had 45 records, but everything was on, all the commercials were on disc, and the log would show the disc number and the cut number to be played, because it'd be maybe four or five cuts from the same sponsor on the disc. And we also did a lot of live commercials. About half the things we did were live.
That must have been pretty exciting, doing the whole show with nothing but records.
That's right. And with the commercials being on disc, it gave us the chance to listen to the beginning and the end, so we would know when, after you played them a while, you knew what the ending was. But to listen to the end of it, you could do intros and outros of those things, sometimes come up with a little funny bit to put in front of it.
Do you remember how long it was before tape came into vogue in the world of radio?
It was about mid-62 when the cassettes came in, yeah. Because when I left WAKY and went down to WMPS in Memphis as PD, they had all their commercials on card at that time.
I bet that was a lot more fun, huh?
It was in a way, but with it being on disc, as I say, you could listen to the intros and the outros and really put a little bit more personality, a little bit more sell into the commercials.
Now, what shifts did you work at Wacky?
I went there at 7 to midnight. Then I went noon to 3. When I went there, mornings was Jim Light, and then came Bob Russell, then Art Keller, Jack Sanders, myself, and then Bill Ward. Bill and I started at the same time he did overnight. When Jim Light left, Bill went to mornings, and we hired Jack Grady to do overnight. And then Bob Russell left, and I went noon to 3.
Which shift did you like better, doing the middays or doing nights?
The nights were a lot more fun. I called myself the night creature, and you could do a lot of things. This was just when Echo was coming. I remember Halloween. We had the tape going all the time so I could do Echo and supposedly did my show from a haunted house and had all the sound effects. I went noon to 3, and in the summertime, it was a poolside party. We had this big 12-inch reel of effects that were made at a swimming pool, and that played in the background every time the mic was open. I'd open the pot for the sound effects in the pool, and it was a poolside party. And we had jingles like Time to Turn Over, and my famous saying was, we're going to tan your hide, and things like that. And one day, some people actually came to the studios in their swim trunks and towels under their arm, won't know where the pool was.
The power of radio, huh?
Oh, I'm telling you, it was fun in those days.
Now, do you remember, were you all using Pam's jingles?
Yes. Yeah, we sure were. We used the color radio series.
Now, when you were working at nights, was the station, being a top 40 radio station, geared and programmed towards teenagers?
Yes, it was. Except one day, I got a call. Jack Lee was the general manager, and he called me at home about 2 o'clock. I knew Gordon was in town because he'd showed up the night before and came into the control room. I didn't know who he was, and I said, if you'll step out in the hallway, I'll have someone help you. And he said, well, I just want to know what Jack Lee's phone number is. And I said, well, if you just go out in the hall, I'll have someone to help you because no one's allowed in the studio. He said, well, I just wanted Jack Lee's number. I said, well, step out in the hall there, and the nails man will get you his number. And he stuck out his hand. He said, oh, by the way, I'm Gordon McClendon. And I nearly passed out. But anyway, I got a call from Jack Lee that Gordon wanted to meet with me. I thought, boy, I shouldn't have said what I said last night. Anyway, I went into the radio station and went into Jack Lee's office, and he and Gordon went there, and Gordon said, you're going to start playing romantic music. And I said, where? And he said, here. When? Tonight. So we did Top 40 from 7 till 10 p.m. 10 o'clock news at 10:05, we came in with romantic music till midnight, and it was called Romance. One night, it was before Romance started, but Mike McCormick was doing the news. Tom Perry was in the station news cruiser just driving around town waiting for some news to happen. While Mike was reading the 8 o'clock news, Tom came in the studio into the control room, and we started talking. Mike got through the news. He came in, and while the records were playing, we concocted the idea that Tom would go to a payphone and call the police and say that he and his girlfriend were parked down at the foot of 5th Street, down on the, next to the Ohio River there, and saw an alligator. And we knew that the police would have to send a car, whether they believed it or not. So he did, and he had a police radio in the news cruiser, and as soon as they sent the car down there, we put him on the air live. Here's Tom Perry Lyre from the WAKY News Unit number 4, whatever. And he came on and said that the Louisville police have sent a squad car down to the foot of 5th Street to investigate a reported alligator sighting. And he said, I'm on the way down there, we'll have a report. So, make a long story short, when the 9 o'clock news came on, there were about 2,000 people down on the Ohio River there at the foot of 5th Street. There were 4 or 5 squad cars that had them down there directing traffic. The Coast Guard was out with a searchlight trying to find that alligator, and Tom was interviewing people who actually saw the alligator.
That's wonderful.
And the next morning, it was on the front page of the Louisville Courier-Journal that an alligator was sighted in the river. And I got a call next morning from Jack Lee and said there was an alligator sighting down in the Ohio River last night. Did we have that on? And I said, yes, sir, I think we were probably the first station to have that on. Yeah, I think we scooped everybody on that one. And he said, well, you know, we're paying, costs a lot of money to have someone drive around all night. Just want to make sure we're covering the news. We covered it all right. We never told anyone what happened.
If nothing's going on, we'll just make it up.
That's right.
Now, where exactly was WAKY when you worked there?
It was in the Kentucky Home Life Building, 6th floor of the Kentucky Home Life Building at 5th. Oh, I can't remember the address. It was right across the street from the police station, I remember.
Now, what were the studios like?
They were okay. The newsroom was in the corner, and then beside that we had the control, what we call the control room. Right behind that was an announce booth, and then the production control room all lined up. And there was a little booth off to the side of the control room where you could announce from, and sometimes guys who wanted to get into radio would come up and operate the board for the DJs, and we'd just do the announcing. But they weren't anything elaborate, not at all.
So compared to the state-of-the-art in 1959 or 1960, it was pretty average, huh?
Yeah, at Wacky, we didn't have card machines. We were still playing disc when I left and went to Memphis, and they were already using cards, but at Wacky, we were not.
I want to ask you about putting your show together at Wacky when you were doing the night show or the midday show. Mm-hmm. Did you select all the records, or was there a format, or could you just select from a particular universe of songs?
We could select from a universe of songs. Every other one had to be from the top 40 list, and that was it. Not a lot of restrictions.
So you decided how you were going to put those songs together, right?
Yes, sure did. At WMPS, we did have somewhat of a format. Had to play six songs an hour from the top 20. Then we had a slow, medium, fast rotation that we followed. Didn't have that at Wacky. It was just every other one from the top 40 and have fun and play hit music. If you wanted to play the top 10 in a row, that was fine.
Did you take requests?
Yeah.
So it's no problem getting a request on, huh?
Oh, heck no. Normally it's going to come up pretty soon anyway, you know. But we also had a pick hit of the week and a number one song. And the number one song was played every other hour. Then alternating hours, the pick hit was played. And they were logged. So those were the two things that had to be played at certain times.
Did you guys put listeners on the air at that time?
No, I'm sure we didn't. Really had no way to do it. I guess we could have recorded it and then done it, but we didn't put them on the air.
So looking back on your broadcast career, was Wacky one of the highlights or just kind of one of the stepping stones?
It was a highlight. We had a lot of talented people there. And it was something just magic about it. I think probably the oldest DJ we had was 26, 27. We were young, foolish, thought we were bulletproof, and just took chances. And we did, I think, some things that were then certainly innovative. We had a billboard campaign, the 30 sheeters, the poster board, not the big painted one. And we were just going to have WAKY put on it. And each letter would be a different color, like red, yellow, green, blue, something like that. Well, the first week they put it up was WAK. No Y. Whatever was on the board before that was still showing. So we took the Y's out of all of our jingles, and we'd only say WAKY when we had to do the legal ID. The rest of the time it was WAK Radio, WAK 790. We took it off the air, and it got to the point where people were making Y's and bringing them to it. Here's your Y, will you shut up complaining about it? Now we complained and complained that they weren't doing us right. Then the second week they put up our Y, but it was an old English Y, not the block letters, and it was black. And that was no good, so we complained about that. The third week, they put up the regular letter that it was supposed to be, but they put it upside down. And then the fourth week of the campaign, they put everything right. But it really focused attention on our billboard campaign. And in 1972, KNET in Los Angeles almost made history by putting their billboards upside down. We did it in 1961 in Louisville. But we did things like that. We had Jim Brand once doing his show from underwater at a swimming pool out at the Plantation Subdivision, which was kind of difficult to do and took some creative thinking to get it done, but we got it done.
How about some of the other promotions? Do you remember any others?
Yeah, we had one where we hit a model car, and whoever found it got the big car, and man, they almost dug up the city. We tied it to a string and hung it from a little boat launching ramp down at the Ohio River at that time, and we tied it to a string and had it underwater there, but people were digging all over town. We had to come on the air, it's on public property, don't be digging, you know, all that sort of stuff. And we thought they never was going to find that thing, but they did. And I went on vacation once, and they didn't say anything about it, but they had a contest, $1,000 to the first person that finds Hal Smith and brings it back to the radio station. We come home from vacation, people in the front yard grabbing at me and trying to get me to go to the radio station with them. I didn't know what was going on. But things like that, it was fun. It was exciting.
Now, WKLO was a top 40 station, too, and you were saying that Wacky really beat them in the ratings the whole time you were there. Why do you think that was?
I think it was our audaciousness, aggressiveness. For example, they had a guy by the name of Paul Cowley. Paul worked 7 to midnight. He also owned a record shop. And at that time, early 1962, there were some payola hearings going on. Senator Harris in Washington was conducting some payola hearings. Well, one day, Bill Ward got off at 9. I went on the air at noon, which gave us 3 hours to get into mischief. We had our receptionist call WKLO and ask for Paul Cowley. And, of course, he wasn't there. And we knew that and told him to leave a message. And the message was to call Senator Harris's office at such a number we gave. And we couldn't wait till that night. He'd come in, and these payola investigations are going on. He had the record shop. We suspected he was getting free records to sell. But anyway, here's a message to call Senator Harris at the payola committee. We thought that was fun. Shake him up a little bit.
It was.
And they'd hire somebody new for afternoon drive. We'd call them up. How you doing? How you like Louisville? What are they paying you? And they'd say, oh, good grief, we pay our all-night man more than that. If you ever get unhappy, give us a call. Well, he was unhappy at hello, you know. So we did lots of things like that.
Now, why did you leave Wacky?
It had sold, changed hands, and it was at the point where the new owners, when we got our paychecks, it was a race to the bank to be sure your check cleared. And that just was not a good situation. And I was offered more money and a good deal at WMPS in Memphis, which was owned by Plow.
Now, why do you think that McClendon sold the radio station?
I never did really know. He sold it to what became Lynn Broadcasting. They owned WMAK in Nashville, and the principal was a man by the name of Fred Gregg. And he bought WAKY was the second station. Then they bought KAAY in Little Rock, Arkansas. And Lynn, L-I-N, broadcasting came from the fact that Fred Gregg lived in Nashville.
You left Wacky to go to Memphis?
Yes.
What have you done since then?
Went to Memphis, got out of radio for 3 years, and did promotion for Capitol Records, everything from Detroit down to New Orleans. And Bill Ward, meanwhile, had stayed in radio, and he was GM at KLAC in Los Angeles. He called me, wanted to be his PD. So I went out and was PD at KLAC. The station became hugely successful. They made me general manager of KNEW in San Francisco, and the orders were to get it successful, get it profitable, and we're going to sell it. I did, and they did. They sold it and sent me to WMR in Philadelphia. It became quite successful, as you probably know. And they had WIP in Philadelphia, which was had fallen on hard times, so they gave me the job of fixing that. And just as we got started, John Kluge decided to sell the entire Metromedia radio division and TV division. And George Duncan, who was president of Metromedia, was going to start his own radio group, and he bought a chain, and one of the stations was in Little Rock, Arkansas, and he wanted me to go down there. So I stayed with him because I didn't want to break in a new boss, and then stayed in Little Rock until I retired.
And when was that?
December 31st, 2001.
So how's retirement?
It's good. It took a while to get accustomed to it, but, you know, golf, tennis, you know, don't have to get up in the morning until I want to, and things like that. It's nice.
Now, did you ever miss being on the air?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was the most fun time. Being in management has its rewards, but, man, there's nothing like being on the air.
What do you think of radio today, Hal?
Oh, it scares me to death. There's no creativity. When we would hire someone, they had to have a knowledge of how to put a music show together. They had to have a good voice. They had to have good delivery to really be able to sell a commercial. And now it's all, you know, done for you. Just play the next record that the computer says. And as a matter of fact, the song is on the computer. You just punch a button and whatever schedule next comes up. The DJs have no real say in it. There are some who still have some personality, but very few. There are not a lot of Don Imuses out in the hinterlands to come up.
All right. Well, you've given me a lot of useful information, Hal. I really appreciate your time.
It was a pleasure talking to you, and I appreciate your interest in WAKY. I think it probably, look back on it, it was almost a legendary radio station, but all of McClendon's stations were. There was some fantastic radio being done those days. It was kick to work there.